With everyone fighting for attention, how can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy, with Constant Contact. Constant Contact's award-winning marketplace platform has helped millions of small businesses stand out, stay top of mind, and see big results fast. It's okay if you don't know much about marketing. Constant Contact's writing assistant tools and automation features help you craft messaging and say the right things at the right time. I use this to help write and send my email newsletters, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
Are you crying?
No.
Are you crying? Are you crying? There's no crying. There's no crying in baseball.
You think football is still fun?
Yes.
Sir?
Yes, no.
No?
Sir, it was fun.
Not anymore, though, is it? Is it?
No, not by
now. No, it's not fun anymore, not even a little bit.
Just look at that, he hit the fucking ball. He gets a free steak. You having fun yet?
Oh, yeah, I'm having a blast. Thanks.
Good.
All right, welcome back to Big Screen Sports, the sports movie podcast, brought to you by Blue Wire Podcast. I am your host, Kyle Bandujo. Every month on this show, our patrons from the Big Screen Sports Patreon group vote on a movie, and they have chosen the ultimate sports movie, The Ultimate Risk, Surfing and Bank Robbery, Point Break. Shout out to our producer-level patrons, Aaron Figueroa, Mike Schubert, Steve Rogers, Kevin Frost, Mike D, Ryan Yeager, Mike Dreese, James Kowalewski, and Chris Mykowski. They were among the group that chose Point Break to cover in December. I've got my good buddy J.R. Hickey covering it. Let's get right into it. Vaya con Dios. All right, returning to Big Screen Sports, one of my favorite guests, one of my good friends, a guy who I haven't seen since like 3 days ago, my buddy J.R. Hickey. J.R., welcome back to Big Screen Sports.
Kyle, thanks for having me. We have a lot to catch up on. What I have for breakfast in the 2 days that we haven't seen each other, what I have for lunch, and yeah, great little weekend and the crash household in Texas. I highly recommend, for those who haven't donated to the Patreon, if you donate, Kyle will personally put you up for 3 days, take you to that, a basketball game. It's a really, for lack of a better way to describe it, it's a really nice touch.
It's quite the perk. I will say, I won't. but if you're in San Antonio, holler. We'll go play golf. But you're not staying here. JR, that's a nice touch. What is that? Tell the folks.
Oh yeah, thanks. That's a Nice Touch is a TikTok account that I started that is essentially me going around and identifying little moments of affluence or little moments of like, I don't know, like just like it's what it is. It's nice touches that you see that make your experience, whether it's at a hotel or restaurant or airplane, anything that makes your experience better. And the definition of a nice touch is super broad. So I created this really stupid TikTok account where I go around and just kind of point them out, and people liked it and hate it equally. So it's doing pretty well.
It's my favorite account on TikTok. We have my wife and I have both incorporated "That's a Nice Touch" into our regular vocabulary. So everyone go check that out. But JR, there's no reason to not get right into this. No. You and I are here to talk about Point Break, the 1991 action thriller with an unbeatable plot. An FBI agent goes undercover to catch a gang of surfers who may be bank robbers. Just perfect. Flawless.
No plot holes there. None at all.
Starred Keanu Reeves, Patrick Swayze, Gary Busey, and Lori Petty. Directed by Kathryn Bigelow. Got a 69% on Rotten Tomatoes. Some people love this movie. Some people hate this movie. JR, for you, Hall of Fame, All-Star, Starter, or Benchwarmer sports movie?
Okay, so in terms of a movie itself, I would rate it much higher. I would say this is like in the all-time guys being dudes, Hall of Fame, bro down movie. Like we were just talking before we started recording, like your wife left halfway through you watching it. My wife didn't even bother, just went in the back bedroom and turned on some, like, you know, Real Housewives or something like that. But in terms of the definition of this question as a sports film, I will demote it down to an all-star. And that's probably just because there is no real like sports competition aspect that makes for, you know, what you would consider a Hall of Fame sports movie. But the scenes that do involve action sports, which are both surfing and skydiving, they're some of the best in film history. Let's just be honest.
And beach football.
That's right. Yeah, we have to talk about the beach
football. And one could say that bank robbery is the toughest sport. So this one is a Hall of Fame for me. This is, I mean, you watch this, like the Fast and the Furious, the original, clearly a ripoff of Point Break.
Yes,
this
is, like, this is like essentially beat by beat.
Yeah, this is essentially the, if you haven't seen Point Break, well, I don't know why you're listening, but I was thrilled when the patrons voted to choose this one because it is, it's incredible. If you haven't seen Point Break, it's the Fast and the Furious with surfing. And frankly, like, I love the first Fast and the Furious movie. I like this one more. This is, it brings us into that new, the 90s action movie. It's kind of the lead in because the 80s was like, you know, big explosions and dudes on steroids and like that whole thing, just excess and like
muscles, helicopters and explosions. Absolutely.
Yeah. And like, listen, Patrick Swayze isn't skinny in this one, but it's much more, it's like, it leads us into this new action thriller. There's great action scenes, there's stuff, but it's not like, it's not in ridiculous abundance, even though this is a ridiculous film. I want to ask you, so this is like one of the first serious things Keanu does, like post Bill and Ted, if you want to call this serious.
I was about to say, where does that serious Ted come from?
what is your Keanu Reeves Mount Rushmore look like?
This was tough for me, Crash, because Keanu's been in our life for a long time. Like you said, like this kind of tits him off as like this action star. And, you know, we're both roughly the same age. I'm in my early 30s. So like Bill and Ted wasn't really at the forefront of my, you know, film watching as a young man. So, okay, here they are in orders, in order of like my favorite to probably like from 1 to 5, like from best to fifth best, as opposed to worst.
Aren't there 4 people in Mount Rushmore? Is it 5?
It's 4. We'll keep it at 4. I kind of have a tie at number 4. So
you might have. I was about to say, like, I've been going as I've been using this as 4 forever.
By the way, if you haven't gone to Mount Rushmore in South Dakota, skip it. You pull off to the side of the highway and you're like, oh, wow, there they are. It's a lot smaller than pictures make it out to be. And it's far off in the distance. And that's it. That's all it is. There's no museum. You can't go inside the heads and look out. You just see them up on a mountain and go, holy shit, there it is. And then got to go eat some terrible food at a South Dakota diner.
All the Mount Rushmore stands are going to flood my podcast with 1-star reviews now.
All those history teachers and all those. Yeah. Okay. My Keanu Reeves Mount Rushmore. So one overall, it's recent, but it's just so goddamn good, is John Wick, the original.
John Wick, yeah, that is on mine as well.
It resurrected Keanu's career. He hadn't had a hit in like 6 years. And it kind of started this like Terminator style, unkillable action star thing that we kind of now see with Mission Impossible and like Fast and the Furious 8 and 9, where it's like, nobody can kill this guy. He's on a mission, and they're just so much fucking fun. And I think the reason John Wick 1 resonates the most with me, and I know you can relate to this, as we are both new puppy owners, the entire impetus behind that first movie is that, spoiler alert, someone kills his puppy, which is one of the worst things you can do in film.
It's horrible.
I'd rather kill a kid with cancer than kill a puppy.
Yeah, completely fair. I mean, it's a perfect action movie, and I love it. Does not try to be anything more than it's not. Like, Point Break tries a lot of things. it goes way out there. John Wick, even like with all the marketing, with just how that movie is, just like, this is a guy getting revenge. It's a little deeper than just the you killed his dog. Like, it's a guy who was suffering from some things, but like, it's just like, he's coming for that ass, and that's the whole movie, and it's perfect.
It's great. And I mean, they're going to probably make them forever. They just finished shooting John Wick 4. And like, they're a fucking great time, man. They're a great hang, as I used to say. Second one for me. Wait, are we going back and forth?
Oh, no, I'm going to get yours and then we'll evaluate. Based okay. They're probably pretty similar.
Yeah. Okay. So second one, and people are going to be surprised at this one, but it just hit me at the right time, right age. It was one of the first DVDs I ever owned. It's The Replacements.
On mine as well.
Keanu Reeves, the second time playing an ex-Ohio State quarterback, by the way.
What's a better name, Johnny Utah or Shane Falco?
God, that's a toss-up. If I were to have a son, my name's John, Johnny Utah. Shane Falco is a video game character name. It's incredible.
It's so, so good. And the thing is, like, since The Replacements and since Point Break, since Johnny Utah, we have had Johnny Manziel, Johnny Football.
Yeah.
And so Johnny Utah, you would think like he was the quarterback. Like that would be the best. In fact, I don't know if there's been a quarterback at Utah named John, but if it's if they don't nickname him Johnny Utah. But yeah, The Replacements is mine. That is a movie. And it helps, like, yeah, it was an early DVD, but also the TNT, TBS, it's still on all the time. Yep. It's got great football action. I'm a huge Replacements fan. That is on my Mount Rushmore.
Pardon my ignorance, but did you do The Replacements?
Yes, that was in the first year of this show.
Okay, and who was the guest?
With Richard Johnson, who is hosting, is one of the co-hosts of the best college football podcast in the game right now, folks. Split Zone Duo. Go check that one out. But that's one of those ones, like there are movies, like I did Major League early on, and they're just movies I want to keep revisiting and
totally
and stuff like that. So The Replacements is definitely one like that. Is that movie is not perfect, but it's very good.
Pain heals, chits did scars, glory lasts forever. I think it's a pretty like reserved Keanu performance, but
it is
the way he delivers that line is pretty great.
I mean, you can see in that movie. So that movie, I think, is 2000 or 2001. This is 91. Yeah. You can see 10 years of growth in that.
Oh, movie. Absolutely. Because we can talk. We'll get to it. His acting limitations are pretty apparent in this movie. Okay. Chugging right along. Third one, pretty standard, Matrix. Like Matrix. The Matrix just came along at the right time. I remember I had a neighbor who lived two doors down. He had all this stuff. He had all the computers, all the video game systems, all the posters. And he had like kind of that setup where you could walk into his house and go right up to his room and not even have to interact with his family. So the Matrix just be on repeat in his house. And I realized later on after his parents divorced, like the reason he like had that setup was because his parents were never around.
Yeah. But like, yeah, there were a lot of real life Neos in the 90s. Like yeah. a lot of those guys just plugged into the computer, plugging away.
And you know what? They've all grown into well-adjusted, super non-problematic individuals.
They have certainly unhooked themselves. They have definitely unhooked themselves from the internet and have absolutely not stayed on message boards for the last 20 years.
They're loving husbands. They're great fathers. Yeah, absolutely.
We're definitely not in DC on January 6th. Absolutely not.
All right, my last one, and this is the toss-up. Okay, I'm from Chicago, born and raised. Any film that takes place in Chicago, I have a soft spot for. Like automatically, I'm like, I recognize that place. I love this movie, which is so fucking pathetic. It's like, I don't know, I had a tweet recently where I was like, it's like when you hear a cover song of a song that's really popular. I'm like, I really like this. Someone else is singing the lyrics to a song that other people know. And it's, I'm like, what a stupid like trigger in my brain makes me like something like this. So Hardball is number four. But it's also tied, and here's where the fans or the listeners are just going to blast me. Have you seen The Lake House?
No. I will say Jacqueline has, man, when you said tied, I was like, oh, good. It'll be tied with my fourth choice. It turns out, no.
I zagged. Okay. So Hardball, I mean, great sports movie, Bad News Bears, set in the housing projects of Cabrini Green in Chicago. I lived four blocks up from Cabrini Green on Halstead. At the time, there was only one of those housing projects left. In the film, there are like eight, which just goes to show like how long it took to gentrify and renovate that area of Chicago. So it always kind of held a special place. Sometimes I would walk by that housing project and go, holy shit, Hardball, it's still standing. I don't even know if there was people living in there anymore. You know, Big Papa, Notorious B.I.G., everything good you can say about that movie, I loved. Now, Lake House, Kyle, is the story of a man who is communicating with a woman in the future via his mailbox at his lake house that she is renting in the future.
There's a great Family Guy, quick Family Guy bit about that movie involving Keanu and what things you can put in the mailbox.
Penis.
Penis in the mailbox. So your Mount Rushmores are very similar, but on yours, Speed Erasure, because Speed is perfect.
It is. It's kind of the perfect action movie. And Speed between The Matrix and John Wick, to me, I was like, yeah, but like, what just had a bigger impact? And it was definitely John Wick in The Matrix, but that's a total personal preference thing. Like, yes. Yeah. Anyone's like Mount Rushmore of Keanu should be Bill and Ted, John Wick, Matrix, and Speed.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the differentiator for me from Speed and Point Break, it's a little better Keanu. I mean, it's a lot better Keanu. And like this movie, I always go back. I always think about Swayze. Mm-hmm. with this one. This is Patrick. Even though he doesn't show up until 23 minutes in, which I think is an incredible choice.
Yeah,
this is Patrick Swayze's movie.
That's something we have to talk about too, because the runtime of this surprisingly didn't bother me. I saw 2 hours. I was like, oh, I hope this is one of those movies that could really be an hour and a half. I could have gone 3 hours with these guys. Yes, honest to God.
Same. I could have had it. That night surfing scene could have been an hour for me. Loved it. The only thing, this is an interesting IMDb trivia page. The only thing I really want to highlight is I love casting stuff. Mm-hmm. So a couple different things that were thrown out for the role of Johnny Utah. And this is all IMDb. So this could be bullshit. Matthew Broderick originally offered the role of Johnny Utah. Others who auditioned were Johnny Depp, Charlie Sheen, Willem Dafoe, and Val Kilmer.
So who out of those in 91 could you have seen doing it? I could see
not Sheen, Broderick.
Not Broderick at all. No. Sheen and Kilmer, I could.
Kilmer would have been really, really good.
Absolutely.
Because like Kilmer's hot. He's doing The Doors. He's got Heat coming up a few years after. Yep. Like Kilmer would have been really good. Depp isn't too weird at that point.
Yet. Yeah.
Like, yeah. So, I mean, you know, he's got. Johnny Depp is like Dwight Gooden. Like when it was Rockin' Man, there's no one better. There were just a lot of times where it is not rocking.
Yeah, yeah, it's true. His stats overall, his percentage is pretty low.
Yeah,
but you're right. When Depp hits, he hits. Yeah, I completely agree. Charlie Sheen, I think he just had enough charisma. You know what I mean? Like he could have played that a little bit more comedically. Which, let's be honest, like. Johnny Utah is a little bit of a stiff in this. He's a little bit like straight and narrow. And then he's like really hamming it up in his like surfer bra performance, which is hilarious.
It's very unintentional comedy, like a great, great unintentional comedy from Keanu. And like that hamming it up thing. Charlie Sheen has more legitimate comedic timing. Like he's very funny. Yep. So it'd be kind of interesting to see how that would have played out, but I'm glad.
And he's an athlete, which is super important in a movie like this.
Yeah, still he's coming off a steroid cycle from Major League, and that one still probably would have been carrying some of that muscle. Let's go into the best scenes, chronological order. I tried to be selective. The first bank robbery is just, I wanted to point it out. It is just, it's a great bank robbery shtick. Like this movie, the fact that they have this whole ex-presidents thing, I'm big on that. It's definitely not the best scene, but that's a great shtick.
The town copied it later on with the masks. It's like the callback to Point Break.
Yeah. And I mean, it's a good setup for the movie too, in that the plot, like the, you know, this ridiculous FBI agent goes undercover, but like they get the things right with the bank robbers too. Like this is why they haven't been caught. They're in 90 seconds. You know, this whole thing, like I'm a huge fan of that.
I think the scene is actually 90 seconds as well, which that's always like a pet peeve of mine when you're watching a countdown on a bomb and it's like 30 seconds till the explosion. And he's got like 3 minutes of exposition and dialogue. And well, they'd all be dead by now. Like, so I think they actually keep it pretty true to the time, which is nice.
And it pays off at the end because we have multiple of their robberies. And so at the end, when he starts to deviate from their usual thing, we have seen that countdown. So we're like acutely aware of this isn't how this is supposed to feel.
He's deviating. Great word.
Okay. The greatest beach football game ever played. There is a guy in leather pants on the beach.
That is an all-time
uncomfy look.
The amount of hair that is flying around in this scene, it is like... It looks like seaweed, like flying around in the air. It looks like helicopters. You can't make out anyone. It's probably helpful with the stunt doubles, but you can't make out who's who. It's just a bunch of muscle-bound, ripped dudes. It's shot at night, too, so, like, yeah, it's all low lighting. It's, by the way, this whole movie is shot, like, in low lighting. It also looks like everyone in every room in this movie has smoked, like, a pack of cigarettes. There's just, like, a haze over the whole thing, and that's actually – pretty accurate to Southern California, especially in the early 90s, but it was definitely like a cinematographer's choice. Hey, every single room, we're going to have a thick haze hanging over it.
Yeah. How many pickup football games have you played in where the quarterbacks are getting under center and they're running plays?
It's true. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know how many pickup football games I played in, period.
That's a good point. So they all instantly, as soon as Bodie's like, no, don't you know who this is? This is Johnny Utah, Ohio State. And they're all like, oh, man, Johnny Utah. Like, No, they instantly, they're like, oh yeah, so he was famous enough to where all these guys who I don't think are that plugged into college football. Like,
yeah, they're not spending a lot of time on Saturdays in front of the TV.
Yeah, so he's a quarterback. He was famous enough to play in the Rose Bowl. He's throwing left-handed, which is pretty uncommon. Like, not one single other person was even, like, looking at him kind of funny. It's also really funny to think of Bodie just, like, spending his Saturdays watching college football in some bungalow.
It's possible, man. Like, they did up really early to surf, so you could get back in time. On the West Coast, as well, those kickoff time, actually no, they start way too early on the West Coast, so yeah, I don't know, it's a good thought. And also, let's be honest, if a former Ohio State star quarterback is on the beach with like a bunch of like essentially beach bums, he's gonna stand out with a sore thumb. He's gonna throw one pass and they're gonna go, what the fuck was that? Because it's gonna hit someone like right in the numbers, right, like as they're like jumping over a wave, and it's gonna be cinematic.
Yeah, that would have been the first thing, like the first pass he threw would have been like, oh wait, This is different.
Yes.
There's a huge difference. I remember I went to one of the Alliance of American Football, whatever, they had the team in San Antonio, and those are professional quarterbacks. But the game I went to, one of the quarterbacks was a guy who I think played for Toledo or something, like, you know, pro quarterback. Sure. He's fine. The other was Garrett Gilbert, who has played in the NFL, has had a very, you know, mixed career. He's been mostly backup, but he was a 5-star recruit. And you could tell just witnessing the difference between that guy throwing the ball and the difference between this other quarterback for San Antonio throwing the ball. So imagine like former Ohio State quarterback versus surfing bank robber. Huge, huge disparity in talent there. That should have stood out. Next scene, shout out Anthony Kiedis. Back off, War Child. Seriously.
Back off. He's with me.
Kiss my ass.
Back off, War Child, seriously. Thank you.
Stay out of this, Bodie. Yeah, shout out our friend Peter Hart, too. That's his favorite quote. It's one of the most ridiculous scenes in the movie. Like, Johnny Utah, like, steals a wave or, like, gets to undercut somebody. And, like, their solution to that is, hey, we're going to go publicly beat you and, like, the shower just right off the beach. 5.5 feet from the like the highway. It's just it's so funny and so perfectly like Point Break, but like it holds no logical place in a day.
I'm also a huge fan of a someone coming to someone's rescue scene when they were like no clue how that person, you know, saw the action. They just show up out of nowhere. That's a big niche for me. I'm a huge fan of scenes like that. Swayze's hair in that scene, just fucking majestic.
Swayze's hair in every scene. Swayze in general, man. And but even Keanu, like, they both looked like movie stars.
Probably the best Keanu has ever looked.
And that's what we were texting about that last night. It really is like, I'm like, oh man, this guy is a movie star. And I'm used to Keanu now. He's pretty weathered and he has kind of that like hangdog look. But this is like, looks like he sculpted out of clay. Seriously.
Yeah. I mean, even The Matrix 10 years later, and it's by design for that character, but he's pale, he's scrawny, he's more, you know, computer guy. In Speed, he's just more cop. He's got the shape. The hair in this movie works for Keanu, having a little bit more up top.
Perfect.
Yeah. The raid on War Child's house. Mm-hmm. There was a time when Gary Busey was fucking awesome.
Dude, Busey in this movie is at an 11, and we could name 5 other people that are at an 11. Like at this point in time, cocaine is so prevalent and like it's just starting to like there's starting to be information that, hey, this could actually kill you. This might not be good for you, but like the cocaine use on this set must have been so rampant because some outrageous. Of the performances are like some of the lines that Busey delivers, and we'll get to quote, so I won't step on any of them, but like I'm like, who wrote that and how much of it did Busey ad lib? Because it cannot have come out of a writer's mouth or hands.
Yeah, and this scene is when the movie hits that quota that 80s and 90s action movies had to have. It's like we gotta show boobs for no reason. Yeah. Like Keanu gets his ass kicked by a bare naked woman. The woman who opens the door is wearing almost nothing like normal people totally do.
Yep.
Also a very painful stabbing in that raid. But it's a very exciting scene.
Isn't the naked chick stabbing someone?
I believe the naked chick stabs that guy in the back twice. Tough.
pretty good. Usually Nate Dechitz just get like thrown through plate glass windows and like knocked unconscious pretty good. Like score one for Nate Dechitz in National Movies Everywhere.
Yeah, and if you're lining up more Fast and the Furious parallels, this is this is essentially the raid on Johnny Tran's house, yeah. Which is like we have the wrong guy. And also I don't know if I never noticed or I just didn't remember, but Tom Sizemore is the undercover cop in the man. Who's had it worse since this? Tom Sizemore or Gary Busey?
Well, honestly, Sizemore stars in Heat like a couple of years after this, so I think he's
on
the way up.
Saving Private Ryan and right after that.
So like, let's be honest. Tom Sizemore has not had the easiest time, but he's on the up in this one, where Busey is kind of beginning to crash and burn. So this is just like 2 years after Busey's like horrific motorcycle accident and like the beginning of what is very clearly onset like traumatic brain damage, because let's be honest Busey in the 2000s is a fucking mess, the poor guy.
Yeah, Sizemore and Busey is just two comets flying very close to the sun just crossing each other at one time, but they're both gonna get into the sun.
I would have put Sizemore for the Lenny Harris pinch hitter award, but he literally has like two lines. It's not enough. But
I wrote him down just because it was notable, but yeah, he's not in enough, but he does make the most of it. Like absolutely. you can see where Heat comes from.
Staying at the Ramada.
Heat where he takes a child hostage. Okay, so the last hour of this movie is fucking bonkers. Like it does not stop. So it goes bank robbery, skydiving, bank robbery, no parachute skydiving. Like that's 50 straight minutes.
So here's my question. And I think the skydiving is cinematically some of the most beautiful, gorgeous action in this film and in any action film. But what was the point of the first skydiving? It's almost like there was like a continuity thing where they were like, well, now we need to have two. If you do the research, like Patrick Swayze was an accomplished skydiver and loved doing it. But like, so they find Johnny Utah out. He chases him down that crazy foot race, which is awesome.
So at that point, they're having the conversation about we need to skip town, and Bodie's like, no, this ups the stakes of the game.
And then let's all go skydiving as pals. And then it's just this 15-minute skydiving sequence. Johnny Utah's on edge as he thinks they've like ripped his parachute or trying to screw him in some way. He goes anyways.
And it's common around. They all know the situation. He's making jokes like that. They know why he's making jokes. He knows why he's making jokes. Like we're definitely going to go into Johnny Utah as a
decision maker,
his effectiveness as a police officer. But it's that whole skydiving scene is really like the point of it is like, we need two skydiving scenes. We just gotta have it.
that's the point. Like it would. I think it would have been more impactful, honestly, Kyle, if like they all jump out of a plane. We could see them doing all this beautiful skydiving, and then you get Johnny Utah jumping out without a parachute. But yeah, I'm not Catherine Bigelow. I'm not an award-winning director.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing for the sake of plot device is that like he probably doesn't jump out of the plane without a parachute, as he does like 3 hours later if he has not already gone skydiving before.
True
Because I mean, that's from what I've heard from people who've gone skydiving. That's the thing. It's like you go once and then you're like, I'm ready to jump out without a parachute and just try to catch someone. That's the natural progression.
So question for you, yay or nay skydiving, would you ever do it?
I would.
Yeah.
I might be, so I am obviously, you know, I'm a 30-year-old dad now, so I read a lot of World War II books. And I've read Band of Brothers like 5 times, and they say when they're training them, the paratroopers, to do their jumps, they would always tell them to, when you get up to the door, to grip the outside of the plane, because if you grip the inside of the plane, chances are you will not jump out.
Yeah.
And most guys who never jumped didn't. Like they would give him one more chance, but most guys wouldn't. I feel like I would get there and then I would be inside of the plane guy and I'd be like, you know what? Take me down.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I would definitely do it. I have a little bit of a adrenaline junkie in me. Like not like I wouldn't jump like, you know,
Bodie would see some shit in you.
Maybe, but like, but I would do the proper like training. I would, you know, do tandem jumps. I would do partners. I would get licensed. I would get certified. Like, however many it is, 50 before I get to jump on my own. But yeah, I do the work. I tried to get my motorcycle license when I was 18 years old. And like, got to the graduation of the class and you are required to accelerate a motorcycle to like 20 miles an hour and then stop in a box that's like 5 feet long, drawn in chalk on like the cement. And if you skid out of the box or you don't stop within the box, you automatically fail the whole class. And that day it was pouring rain and you had to still do that, but they can't change the like parameters of the test just because it's raining. And every single person in the class failed outside of one ex-Chicago cop who was just getting his license renewed and had been on a motorcycle for like 20, 30 years. And I just never went back. And
congrats to all those people who failed and have saved their lives.
Yep.
Thus far.
My wife, my siblings, motorcycle. My mother, she's like, I'm so glad you failed that class. And oh man.
As your friend, I'm very glad you failed that class. What for you is the best of the last hour? So the first bank robbery, where Johnny ends up chasing after him, goes into that chase. He's chasing Swayze. The first skydiving scene, the bank robbery where they go for the vault and that cop tries to play hero. Yeah. Swayze probably looks the most handsome murderer of all time. In that one, and then the skydiving scene, the jumping with no parachute.
It's the jumping with no parachute. I mean, it's so fucking ridiculous, but like. After seeing that, like we just discussed, like after seeing it the one time and no real action happening while skydiving, they just like land and, you know, all hold hands and sing Kumbaya. Like seeing that with some real violence attached to it and, you know, them, him holding on to Swayze or holding on to Bodhi and like being like, pull it, man, pull it.
What? Pull the shit, Bodhi!
You are crazy!
Pull the fucking show!
Why don't you pull it?
No games, Bodhi! Pull the cord now!
Nah, you pull it. Go ahead, Johnny, pull it. You gotta drop the gun, right? If you use your other hand, what are you gonna hold on with?
Pull it right now, or I blow your fucking head off and pull it myself!
The only way it's gonna happen, my friend. Do it!
I swear to God, I will!
Do it, man! Do it or you're gonna die, Johnny! 6 seconds! We're gonna be meat waffles! Fire! Four!
You fucking crazy!
Three!
Pull it! Shit!
That was cool. I love that. By the way, you could never hear anyone saying anything if you were
that was in the research. Yeah, Mythbusters took a look at that one. That one, this movie has a lot of those ridiculous 80s, 90s action scenes.
Yeah.
That the jumping out of the plane with no chute just takes it to a whole nother level. It's
100%.
It's fucking awesome. It is literally one of my favorite scenes ever. It is so ridiculous. Just absolutely, absolutely love it. What it is, so is that the best scene for you in this movie as a whole?
Best scene? Good question. I think it's a tie between the failed bank robbery and then the skydiving without a parachute. And in my opinion, because they're just the most heart pumping and like things are going wrong. Things could go terribly wrong. Like the surfing stuff. And I kind of think like a lot of the surfing footage, while this is the best surfing movie, bank robbing surfing movie ever. Like, I think a lot of the surfing footage is like a little discombobulating. Like it's like really tight shots. It's shot in low light. I think that's just because A, they didn't have the technology to get like drones out there on the water, and B, like these guys weren't big surfers. Like you couldn't get Keanu and Swayze out there on boards and get them like in a good enough position to make it look like, oh, these guys are pros.
Yeah. I mean, the first half of the movie, if you're, like you said, it's a longer runtime for an action movie. It's 2 hours and 2 minutes. Like there's probably some stuff that you could cut a little bit of, like chop up some. But it's the second half of the movie is untouchable because like we said, it is just, it's pure action. It is just, it's straight up cocaine on film. And it is awesome. I'll go with the skydiving scene as well. Like that's, it's almost this entire long sequence from essentially when they walk into the bank with Keanu and it leads into that. It's great. Let's take a quick ad break and then get back with the best quote.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Okay, best quote. This one has some heaters.
Oh, yeah.
Peters, is there, when I say best quote, is there something that sticks out to you right away?
There's two, and I think everyone knows them. It's "Back off, War Child, seriously," and yeah. Pappas going, "Utah, give me two."
Right around that corner, there is a sandwich shop. They sell meatball sandwiches. Best I've ever tasted. Would you go get me two? Come on, partner. Two. Thank you. Utah, give me two.
Give me two.
And that scene, it's funny. I didn't say this at the beginning. I hadn't seen this movie in probably 10 years. So like, I had to kind of refamiliarize myself with the plot while I watched it. The way that scene is set up when they're waiting outside the bank and he suddenly wants two sandwiches at exactly 10:30, it made me think, like, is Pappas in on this? Is Pappas like setting him up to like miss the bank robbery while he reads his Calvin and Hobbes? It's so almost deliberate in the way it does that. And that's not the case at all. He's just like a nut job who wants two sandwiches.
He's just, yeah, a fucking psycho who's eating two meatballs. What would two meatball subs do to you, to the rest of your day at 10:30?
Well, you know, you just spent a long weekend with me and it would do nothing because I eat about every hour and 45 minutes. So,
but you'd be due for a nap too.
I would be due for a nap. Yeah, at this age, absolutely. But for that cocaine Busey energy, like, but you're not... You're not that hungry when you're on cocaine. That's the other part of it. It's just
that's a good
point. So wild.
Yeah, there's a couple other lines, and sure. They're more for the delivery that the characters do. Shout out to John C. McGinley, who plays like the stiff FBI guy, pretty far away from
stiff.
Dr. Cox from
Scrubs. More like manic.
Yeah. I think this is in our first scene in the movie.
Yep.
You're a real blue flame special, son. Young, dumb, and full of cum. And then a little while later, we must have an asshole shortage.
He spends the entire movie screaming at the top of his voice. No
and
matter
then he gets
what
his ass knocked out by Pappas.
Yeah, which would immediately get Pappas suspended and like all this logistical bullshit we don't have to talk about. But you're right. Yeah, I like him in Scrubs. I definitely liked him in The Rock as one of the like lieutenants under Ed Harris. However, like, I don't love this performance by him. He's, again, just screaming nonsense in their faces. Like, you can do that. You can be a little more subtle with, like, the disgruntled, you know, sergeant who, like, doesn't approve of their ways. And also, this is the first time I've heard young, dumb, and full of cum. Like, I never knew where that came from. And I'm glad I now know its origins.
Imagine being, like, you're someone who writes professionally. Imagine, like, when you get that down on paper for the first time, you're like, fuck, that's it.
Crack your knuckles. I'm going to go take a walk. That's a good one. That feels great.
Bodie's quote, "It's not tragic to die doing what you love." He's talking about his quest for the 50-year surf, but
yeah.
I would imagine that all his buddies who got gunned down in various forms or fashions would disagree.
Including the cop that he murdered. So that's the other part of it. Like at the end of it, you're still like feel for him a little bit, but you're a cop killer, dude, and you did it pretty much in cold blood. So like,
yeah.
I don't know why anyone would feel any sympathy for you at any point.
That's honestly essential though for him to do that, because if not, we would legitimately be rooting for him to have gotten away.
True, because he at that point he hadn't hurt anybody. He had just stolen a bunch of money. You know, who's gonna side with the banks? It's 100% true. So you do need that turn, but I don't know. I would have preferred like maybe he seriously injures somebody as opposed to killing an off-duty cop.
Yeah, I mean, and it gets and the movie makes a specific choice with that. It zooms in on his face and his fucking blue eyes and his incredible blonde hair, and like you see his face tighten, his buddy's gotten shot, and it's just a straight up execution.
Yeah, brutal.
So, yeah. Okay. The most authentic, least authentic parts of this movie. My most authentic is clear, and this is authentic. It is true in any scenario that it's ever happened in. It is always, always, always a bad decision to fight for someone else's money. Never, never put your life on the line for someone else's money.
It's so true. Yeah, that's a really great like lesson in this middle of this like campy bank robbing surfing movie. It's interesting because
the security guard has the right idea. Like the cop's like, I'm a cop. Dude, he's like, back me up. And the guy's like, no. Like, again, Bodhi gives the perfect instructions. Money's insured.
Yep.
Don't do anything crazy. And like, that's like, again, that's what they tell bank employees. Yep. Like, just hand it over.
Don't be a cowboy. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, that's a great, I totally missed that one. Yeah. I'm trying to think. Most authentic part of the film. I honestly think for a beach volleyball scene, the action is pretty authentic.
You mean a beach football scene?
Sorry. Thank you. Yes. A beach. I'm thinking
they should have had both. They should have done some beach volleyball during the day, football at night. It is, it's a solid beach football game.
It's a solid, like, again, low lighting, like at night, it's easy to like, you know, fake it a little bit, but like that could have gone so wrong in the blocking, in the choreography. And like, it looks when Johnny Utah tackles Bodhi into that wave, it looks like he hits him pretty damn hard. And like, granted, they're falling into the water, so like, you know, couldn't have hurt him that much, but like, and then it kind of starts a little fight. But it that looks like a scrum that could have actually happened. So that would probably be my most authentic moment.
Yeah, because when you're doing pickup sports, there's always someone, like someone comes in with a hard foul or something, and then suddenly like all that person's friends are like, all right, this has gone too far. Now we gotta scrap about this. The least authentic or least realistic part in this one. Lot to choose from.
I was going to say, I mean, let's suspend our disbelief at the entire plot of the entire movie. Also, the fact that they've robbed like 30 banks and like no one can get a print or an ID. 30 banks in LA. Like, I know LA is a big city. It's pretty sprawling, but it sounds like they've been doing it over the course of like a year or two. And it's like, these guys would be the most wanted like criminals in America if that was the case.
Because in Heat, they hit that truck.
Yeah.
And it's like, and like the heat is on it. The heat is on him.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's on.
So I think the other thing, and you mentioned it as being one of your favorite scenes, and I don't think it's a bad scene, but how realistic is night surfing to you? Like, unless it's a full moon and you've got like maybe the whole skyline lit up behind you, like it just seems fucking dangerous and stupid, especially to someone like Johnny Utah, who's only been doing it for what, 6 months?
Well, see, that's the thing. Tyler's, you know, Tyler voices some concerns, and Bodhi's like, he'll be fine. Like, will he though?
Does he have insurance? Did anyone check?
That's the thing. Bodhi is so Zen master, go with the flow guy. And in this movie, until that last bank robbery, like everything, like he's right. And you believe him. And that's, the character is meant to be like inassailable until he lets things go too far. But in real life, he's like, you know, the character is probably a little drunk, a little high. He's like, let's go out for knife surfing. Oh, new guy, you'll be fine. And then like they'll come back in and they'll be like, hey man, where's new guy? And then it's like, and then, you know, his body washes up like 3 miles down the shore.
And then they fall asleep on the beach and like, don't wake up with hypothermia. Like it's cold in Southern California at night. Like it's not possible to dunk yourself in a body of water and just lay out on the sand at night and dry out. Like it's just physically not possible. I wanted to really quick, now I'm sorry to derail the pod. I wanted to ask you if you saw a documentary that came out about 6 months ago on HBO Max called 100 Foot Wave.
I did not, no.
So like all of these surfing scenes in this movie just reminded me of 100 Foot Wave, because again, as I mentioned, they're all pretty elementary in terms of like the way they're shot, and that's because very simply, like, there were no such thing as drones back then, or like you couldn't have a helicopter over these guys, you would have noticed. So there's this documentary, so a 6-part documentary, it's about Jerry McNamara. He's one of the pioneers of big wave surfing in America. He lives in Hawaii. He's just this nutball who like traveled all over the world looking for the biggest waves, and he found them in a tiny fishing town in Portugal. I think it was called Nazaré. And it's literally like a year by year. They went back every year with the documentary crew, and it's over the course of 6 years. Every year, this place gets more and more popular, more and more big. And the footage in this documentary, Kyle, is breathtaking. It's mesmerizing. My wife and I would just sit there on Sunday nights. It was like a perfect Sunday night before you start the week, popping on and watch these world-class, they're called big wave surfers because they get taken on top of these big waves by jet skis. They're towed up there, and then they just like glide down what's essentially a skyscraper of water. And the footage you're getting with the drones circling them, it's incredible. I highly recommend 100 Foot Wave to anyone that's looking for something Brandon Wender and I would text about it often because it was just that perfect chill Sunday night wind down.
Bodie needed a jet ski. Also, isn't Jerry McNamara, isn't that the name of the former Syracuse guard?
Yeah, exactly.
God bless Jerry McNamara.
He played there for 17 years.
He did. He was one, him and Perry Ellis at Kansas just stayed in college for a decade. We need to talk about the least authentic part about the entire movie. There's just absolutely no way that first week on the job, Johnny Utah gets permission to go undercover. And it goes terribly. Yeah. He ends this case with multiple dead people, including his partner, including a police officer. He, you know, he robs a bank. He doesn't round up all the criminals until 9 months later. Like, not to mention, there's no way he'd stay on the job. But like, I can't think. Let's do this whole thing now. About I wanted to turn the Kevin Costner Freddie Prinze Jr. awards for best and worst on-screen athlete into just talking about like how bad a cop Johnny Utah is. Like, one, you can't go undercover when you are a famous quarterback. That's just not, that's not what undercover. I mean, can you imagine in the Departed if like Leo was slinking into fucking Jack Nicholson's crew?
They're like, play shooting guard at UCLA?
Yeah, didn't you play God for Boston College? Like, we saw in the ticket that you're a cop now. And then, like, and that's
Boston
it.
That, Good Boston
I,
accent.
I do it to drive my wife crazy often. So
he uses his real name. It's in the actual town that he lives in. Or, like, you know, his coworkers. Like, usually when you go undercover, you go deep undercover in, like, a separate city in a separate state. It's a whole thing. Not that we're cops here or know anything about it, but you're absolutely right. It is borderline insane.
I mean, in The Departed, Leo goes to prison to go undercover.
Yep.
And he's just like, no, I'm Johnny Utah. I just started with the FBI, but I'm going to go undercover. I'm going to say I'm a lawyer and offer no other specifics. They don't set up like a cover, like a law office he's going into or anything. Like, it's crazy. And like, he's using a walkie-talkie at the beach while he's undercover looking for these surfers. I mean, every single move, he's a terrible cop. Like,
terrible. Breaks up the sting operation for the drugs, like, fucks that up. Doesn't do any, like, background on these guys. Just assumes they're the bank robbers because they're violent dudes.
So he goes to the, he scopes out the bank. He realizes that Bodie and the guys are the bank robbers. They scope out the bank, and instead of, like, okay, they're here, they're calling him back up. Now we know who our guys are.
Yeah.
So let's have a team ready to swarm them when they get home, or call in backup and be like, hey, we got this car. Nah, I'm just gonna go in guns blazing. I'm just gonna shoot at him. I'm gonna blow my cover. That's the best.
Blow his cover immediately. Immediately that's made. So you're absolutely right. They would take each person in for questioning, see if any other story. Hey, where were you on these nights, these 30 days that these bank robberies took place? Can you confirm that you weren't in these places all 30 times? Like, you're absolutely right, Kyle. I stopped it right at, like, well, a famous quarterback would never be an undercover cop, but you've gone a lot deeper than I have.
Yeah. Well, and then, so he blows his cover, and then he goes back to Tyler's house.
I know.
Like, at that point, listen, and he brings his badge. At this point, listen, the operation's done.
Yeah.
You're not, or he has Tyler come over, I guess, and like is feeding her some light. Like, at that point, you never see her again.
Yeah.
Like, you just,
well, I mean, like, I'd go back to Tyler one more time.
I mean, yeah. let's be real. But like, you find a safe location. You don't just go back to your fake house. And I mean, Johnny Utah is a stunningly bad cop. How
does he get the Australian?
How does, like, he keep his job? So it's 9 months later. So he's been chasing him. How did he, like, after all this, after, so they finish skydiving, Bodie, and he's in Mexico. He is sitting on the ground in Mexico. Bodie has left. How does he get back with this bum ass knee?
Yeah.
How does he go into the office? How does he keep his job? And how do they, this is our guy to chase Bodie down. He was going all around Mexico. You know, Rosie's body turns up. He almost had him in Fiji and other places.
Yeah,
that's not a cheap trip.
Nope.
I am all
in the federal government.
Stunned.
Also,
stunned.
And then here's what it really is, Kyle.
by all intents and purposes, it looks like he robbed a bank. Like there, yeah. he can't prove to his superiors, can't prove to John C. McGinley, no, I was doing it under duress. There was this, I guess she can corroborate, right? She comes and gives him a big tearful hug. No, I was being held captive. But like, if she didn't volunteer that information to the cops, you think she's not going to run for the hills immediately when they get back to the United States? Can we talk about Lori Petty for a second?
Yeah, let's talk about Lori Petty.
Well, and you know what? I might be stepping on, she might be my, what's your
category? Lenny Harris.
Lenny Harris. She's a firecracker, man. She's incredible.
This is the best it gets for Lori Petty.
But you know what? I saw her and I went, oh my God, it's the hot trainer from Free Willy. I forgot
she was in Free Willy.
Oh yeah, dude. She just has this, she's from the South. She's from Nashville. She just has this cadence to her where you're like, you're different. And I want to get to know you because you're different.
Yeah. Except in A League of Their Own, she is all sorts of annoying.
She's annoying in A League of Her Own?
I think she's so annoying in A League of Their Own.
I'm sure you've covered this.
I'm out on that. So we'll do a little more Lori Petty, sure, Lenny sorry. Harris. Yeah. But what else worked? I mean, this is a great bank robbery movie. It's got a lot of stalwart. It's got the rigid top boss, yep. The old partner who's a little jaded, a little loopy. Yep. It's got corny lines. And then the great plot, the robbers are surfers. That gets greenlit every time.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I mean, I think that's it. Like, it's really hard to find anything I didn't like about this movie. Like, we're like nitpicking a little bit here, but like, I think that's just because of the nature of the podcast. But like,
yeah, I think everything, like I say with love, everything that is weird about this movie.
Yeah, there was not a single frame of this film that I did not enjoy.
We mentioned it earlier. What did you think about the movie makes you wait 23 minutes to get to Swayze?
So, and I think that's where like the movie, it doesn't fail. It's obviously a flex, but like I would have liked more Johnny Utah Bodie time to see them bonding, because like really chronologically, it's like they play football on the beach. They get in the fight with War Child. Then they have a party and then they're like best friends. And I would have liked to see them like maybe go through some ups and downs a little bit, just to really believe the fact that like Johnny Utah is seriously considering like throwing away his brand new FBI career because he cares about this guy so much.
Yeah, they needed to drive up to Race Wars together.
Yeah. By the way, I was watching a video about like the similarities, even like down to the beer that everyone drinks. Like Fast and the Furious famously is like, you can have a beer as long as it's a Corona. Like everyone in Point Break is drinking Corona as well. It's hysterical how much they ripped it off.
Yeah, no, I think you're right in that I would have liked more Keanu and Bodie time, and they should have worked that in. But it's I love that it's, because especially, I guess, even if you're seeing this movie for the first time, like imagine you're going to see this in 1991. Swayze has done Dirty Dancing. He's done Roadhouse. Yeah. He is at The Outsiders. Like, he is famous. Like, he is the guy that you're looking for in this one. And making you wait 23 minutes for this character, this almost like mystical character, super, super effective. And it's also like, it's just such a good performance. He's like from this lost generation of hippie souls who can't stand yuppie culture. And then like the next year he's in Ghost, which is just like,
he's a Texas boy like you.
He is. Yeah. There's a, that, I don't know if you watched that Netflix series, The Movies That Made Us.
Mm-hmm.
They did one on Dirty Dancing. That's very good. They kind of get into Patrick Swayze's upbringing.
Dirty Dancing famously was supposed to be like a one and done. Like it was supposed to be released in a few theaters, and it was like a few weeks of his life and redefined his whole career.
Yeah, incredible, incredible stuff.
Yeah.
We talked about it. The night surf action.
Yeah.
Super. It just very like very serene. Yeah. I like that. Like once they're all actually surfing. Like I'm sure there was a lot of B-roll of that. I would have liked to have watched it.
Yep.
What didn't work that we haven't talked about?
I think we've kind of covered everything that hasn't worked. For me, it was like some of that surf choreography, and then just in general, like the premise that like Johnny Utah is this undercover all-American quarterback is a little funny.
Yeah, I mean, he tells Tyler that he gets a football scholarship to law school.
I missed that part. That's
Harvard law going up against Alabama.
Yeah.
Also, like using lawyer as his undercover profession, a profession that is notoriously, you know, so much free time when you're.
Yeah,
when
and
you're
like you never see him in a suit. Every lawyer in the 90s had to wear a suit. They still pretty much have to wear suits to this day. Like you don't see a single briefcase in his car. Like it goes the minimal amount to like, you know, keep his cover.
Yeah. And So this movie is like, you know, buffoonish and all that stuff. And so Reeves's performance, it's not as though like this is the Godfather and he's doing some kind of, but there's some poor line reading on his part when he's trying to, when she's cleaning his face after, after the chase with Bodhi, and he's like, he's trying to confess. He's like, oh, I didn't realize this would be so hard. Like it's, he's not good. Like no. he's not.
And you know what? Like let's make the argument, like, is Keanu Reeves like overall a good actor? Probably not, but he definitely like learns to chameleon himself into his roles a little bit better as he gets older.
He plays to his strengths a little bit. And he plays a little more subdued. He almost sounds like the guy from Bill and Ted. Like he's still like getting that over pronunciation of words kind of like out of his system. And he's been famous for that, but he brings it back down. Like by the time Speed comes around, like he's legitimate. I believe he's a cop.
Totally. Well, I think that performance is like more like straight edge cop as opposed to this, where he's playing this double life. I'm a hippie surf bra, and then I'm also this cop. Remember when Keanu used to do the thing with his hands? Remember this? I don't know. We're doing this over Zoom and like no one see, but like he used to
podcast
talk.
And visual medium.
Yes, yeah. And like he used to like wave his hands around like almost as if he was like about to do like a set shot in the volleyball. It used to drive me crazy. You see, like in Hardball, he does it probably 12 times.
Yeah, it's just with this, it's the parallel between him and Swayze, where Swayze is probably at the peak of his game in this. Like he's you believe him completely as this Zen guy, Bodhi. Like he's awesome.
You fall in love with Swayze. And I think that goes back to the starting, you know, we don't see him 28 minutes in. We fall in love with him as the audience, just as Johnny Utah falls in love with him as like a subject, or, you know, it's not obviously love, but it's like this, he's infatuated by him.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there is definitely, again, the Fast and the Furious, like you definitely see Brian O'Connor being like obsessed with, you know, with Dominic Toretto, like he wants to be him.
Yeah.
So Lenny Harris,
mm-hmm.
Before we get into like our picks, it's kind of, I don't want to say they whiffed, but they kind of whiffed with Bodhi's crew, and that no one is really does anything notable. Like they're not even really that guys. Like I couldn't name them
if you held a gun to my head. And like, you know, Rosie, I guess, is the guy who takes Tyler away. And they're all the names are kind of like, you know, for a 90s action movie, they're kind of gender fluid. Like Rosie's the dude, Tyler's the chick, like, which is great. Maybe it's super progressive, but like, in just talking about them, it sounds a little confusing. But my answer for this, and I think it's your answer, is Pappas. Pappas is the Lenny Harris.
It's Busey.
It's Busey 100%. Like him running across the Pacific Coast Highway to like try to break up the fight, and then him seeing Bodhi in Utah and pretending that he was looking for whatever, his kid or a dog or something like that. That's a great fucking scene.
Pappas, low key, great cop.
Great cop. You know, been at it for a long time, but like not like in, he's not bitter and jaded in a way where he's like, I want to screw this up, Utah. I'm kind of over it. I've seen it all, kind of.
Yeah. He's gotten to the point where he's smoking a cigar in the hallway at the office.
Well, that was the 90s.
Yeah, that's a good point. Is there a big chill in this for you?
So I kind of think Utah and Bodhi's last interaction on the beach in Australia is kind of a big chill moment. Just like, I know that I wish it had been set up differently. I wish we hadn't seen Utah walking down the boardwalk to the beach and seeing a lone figure standing out there. I wish we saw the lone figure first. And we're like, wow.
And then the mask.
And then it's like, I've traveled all this way. And like, clearly time has gone by. Maybe Keanu has a beard. You're like, holy shit, how long has it been? It's kind of ambiguous. But like the fact that he does the whole thing, you know, been every city in Mexico. Like, how long has this taken? You said 9 months? Like, it's, I would have liked it to be more of a surprise than like what I expected to be, but still a very chilling moment, giving him that wave, walking off the beach. That was dope.
Yeah. Because you know, when he's walking down and you see all the people leaving and they play the news from like the weather report and stuff like that, and you'd be like, oh, you know, we know what this is. We know it's that storm. And I will see it is kind of a chill moment when you see the lone figure standing, looking at the water, and you're like, there's a guy when he's like, you know, Special Agent Utah. I don't know. I go back and forth on this. If I would have rather them not do the fight in the handcuff thing, instead of him just like, if him just saying like, listen, man, time to go. There's, you know, we got sharpshooters on the cliffs. Like, you know, it's time to go. And he's just like, Yeah, just let you know.
Let me grab that wave. Come on, yeah. Look at it. You know, we're not screenwriters here, but like I completely agree with you, Kyle. It would have made for a little bit more of a poignant moment. Than it is a little messy, but it still gave me the chills when he's just kind of shows up and he's there. That was really cool.
It's a great set piece for the end of the movie.
Totally,
especially because I think looking at it closely, it does look like you see him basically wipe out and get swallowed by that
mm-hmm.
wave.
Mm-hmm.
So. Which like you wait your entire life for that storm and like first wave, you're fucking
you eat
dead.
Shit.
Kind of like, oh, maybe Buddy wasn't that good.
Not to shout out 100-foot wave again, but there was some gnarly footage of people wiping out and like being carted, like being dragged out of the ocean. And it's like, holy
I was going to say
he's...
like with that though, I would assume that they have like someone is on standby ready to scoop these people.
But like you're still on out in the middle of like an ocean cove with like it takes like a jet ski to get out to you. They drape you over the back of the jet ski, and then it's really hard to you can't just skid up onto the beach because of how big the surf is. So it's gnarly. A couple times it's just like a body bobbing up and down. No one dies in the show, not to spoil it, but like some pretty gnarly injuries, which
I appreciate the warning on no one dying. That's that'll help me watch it yeah, a little yeah, more yeah. comfortably.
100%.
Unfortunately, Before More Restore has been ruined for us because one of the worst remakes of all time yeah. was created for this movie.
And unfortunately, you still kept the name Before More or Restore, which I think I texted to you 5 seconds after you asked me what you should call this. And it was like, just try this. I really wish you'd come up with a better name. This is terrible.
There's nothing better. There's nothing better. Before More or Restore. The thing is like, okay, so Patrick Swayze is obviously dead, but like Fast yeah. and the Furious spawned all these sequels, and like yeah. there's, you secretly hope that Bodie could have survived that. Like as a viewer, even though he murdered that cop in cold blood, you kind of root for him. You
absolutely.
Would have loved to have seen again if they would have come out with Point Break 2 right after Speed. That movie yeah. would have been huge, and it's like yeah, Bodie. You know, survived, like he hid on a rock for a while, like he figured it out.
No, or he goes to prison and gets out and breaks out, that old thing, or has to get out because Utah needs his help for something. And, you know, there's a million
that's
different ways
one of my favorite, like that, that gets me, gotta get the person out of prison to help him solve this crime. That is, that gets my money every single time. Does
and then at the end of Point Break 2, like he's helped Utah solve some crime and he's like, Utah, I gotta go. And then he takes off, and then it becomes the whole same kind of chase, cat and mouse game. Yeah, I would want to see that sequel. I wish they had greenlit it, and apparently there were talks. But even a remake, like a remake now, if both actors are still alive, like a 2015 remake with maybe they're like an older generation, like mentoring a younger generation, I could stomach it, or I would at least see it. But I'm ripping off a famous stand-up comedian who I know named Matt Fulcheron. I'm not watching anything that doesn't have Patrick Swayze. No Swayze, no Wayze.
That's a great one to end it on. JR, thank you so much, as always, for returning to Big Screen Sports. Tell the folks again, where can they find That's a Nice Touch?
At That's a Nice Touch on TikTok. At Now That's a Nice Touch on Instagram. Some woman has That's a Nice Touch. And you can follow me at JR Will Do It on Instagram and Twitter. Kyle, always a pleasure. Great seeing you this past weekend. And happy holidays to you and your listeners.
Absolutely, man. And a Merry Christmas to you, your lovely wife. Merry Christmas to all the listeners. This is, I believe, our last episode before the Christmas holiday. If you enjoy this one, subscribe wherever you get your podcast. Rate, leave a review. You folks know the drill. We'll see you after Christmas. JR, vaya con Dios.
I was going to say it. Nice, nice one. Nice one.
Take it easy.
Later.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unified, UNIFYD healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.